Look, I had a light lunch. I actually had a salad. I think to address all of the issues that you've raised, I would have had to have a much bigger meal than I had. Let me just, I think, pick out, and I'm not going to try to take on all of the issues that you raised. Let me just raise, I think, some of the responses, raise some of the questions that you addressed, and go back to the logic of the paper that I presented this morning, or the presentation. I made the point very early in the presentation this morning that curriculum design is a matter of practical judgment. It's not a science. It's not an algorithm that you could simply kind of ratchet up and sort of crank out a curriculum. It's a very complex issue. There are trade-offs. There are epistemological issues. There are normative issues. There are policy issues. There are political issues. There are sociological issues that have to be put into the mill. And you've got to think these through carefully and try and figure out a balance of kind of outcomes that you want to see and hope that the design that you come up with is going to deliver the mix of outcomes that you think are desirable and acceptable and politically workable and implementable in the system. So it's not an easy task, and I understand why systems fear change. I mean, it's really tough, hard work, and it's hard to make systems change. It takes a lot of time, a lot of money, a lot of cultural capital to make it happen. So I understand the sort of the apprehensions about change and why feels. My starting point was for the paper, for the presentation, was in fact the blueprint that you have generated. And the starting point was the rationale for the change, the statement of purpose, which I, as I indicated this morning, I thought a strong and coherent statement that combined both a traditional recognition that education is not simply about getting a job, but about development of persons, about development of people. And I took that seriously, and I thought that was a clear and an important commitment of the QSA to that principle. And I honour that commitment, and I think it should be honoured in the work that this committee does, this group does. I also thought it important that education serve the more mundane, instrumental kind of task that we ask of it. Kids need to be able to get a job, be good community members, be good citizens. All of those are central, and they're not unrelated to what it is to be a person. So a part of the argument, an underlying argument of the paper that I presented, is that you really can't separate being a person from the kinds of social practices we engage in. It's the manner in which we engage in them that's really important. And what we hope out of education is to give young people a sense of the meaning and value and integrity of what it is they do and why they make the kinds of choices they make. So to answer the question of why a field, the field, I think, and more broadly, the kind of the core electives design principle, was to point to both, there are both instrumental and intrinsically valuable reasons why we want to have a curriculum structure. In the presentation this morning, and then again in Alan's presentation this afternoon, he talked about the shopping mall high school. Now, I want to say something about the shopping mall high school, because I used to teach that book in the United States. I mean, I taught at Penn. It came out in 1986. And it's a study of the process of student choice in the curriculum in the American high school, the comprehensive high school. There were no distribution requirements. Kids could simply pick and choose the subjects, the levels, whatever they took. And what, for the most part, for the kids who came from elite families with parents who had a successful academic background, those kids put together a coherent program and then got them into top universities or good universities. Those kids who didn't have that cultural background at home made choices that reflected their social background. So what happened is that the mechanism of choice became a mechanism for the reproduction of social background privilege. And if this system is committed to limiting the impact of social background on choice, you've got to deal with the social demography of choice. You simply can't hold it up as a mantra and say, choice will solve the problems. It won't. at least in my judgment and on the research that I'm familiar with, choice becomes a mechanism for the reproduction of social background. So that's an issue that, it's not the only issue we have to deal with, but it's one of the key issues. It also, one of the powerful attractions about choice is that choice allows systems to absorb themselves of responsibility for making educational decisions. The results, the choices, the outcomes then become the artifact, a function of the choices that kids make. We're not responsible for the inequalities. This is what they chose to do. These are their choices. Well, I don't think that's good enough. I mean, I think an educational system, the community at large, has to exercise educational authority. That's why that's what you are. We are adults. We've got experience of the world. We understand these issues relatively well or not. And a part of our broader task is to think about what, in our considered judgment, as a community, do we think it's important for young people to know and be able to do? And that's a part of the role we have. And a part of the central thrust of the Shopping Mall High School was that the educational community in the United States had absconded, had failed to report for duty. They were not willing to make choices because it was too politically hard at the local level in a highly decentralized system with school councils looking over school principals and interest groups pushing for this curriculum or that course or whatever. So it was much better to have a potpourri of hundreds of units that kids could pick. It was just politically easier. Now, this system and systems like this system don't have to deal with that politics. It's a system that has centralized, you can exercise leverage, you can make choices, and you can make those choices in a broad way stick across the system. The same is true of Singapore. One of the things that I have, while I have all sorts of issues about how tightly coupled the system in Singapore, my God, they know how to make things happen. Because there is a tight coupling. It's too tight in my view, in all sorts of ways that really matter, particularly the relationship between assessment and curriculum and teaching. But in terms of having leverage over what happens in the school, they're not shy about exercising educational authority in Singapore. I think that's an issue that I think as a system, I think Queensland and any system that's worth its salt in a liberal democracy has to take on and has to tackle. A part of the task is to make choices about what we think is in the best interest of young people and the future of the country. You simply can't afford to let the social structure determine the pattern of outcomes. So that's a part of the background to why I recommended a compound design that combined both a core plus electives and a... what was the other part? The core plus electives... the core plus electives and the broad fields design and plus the student choice. So those three elements, those three core principles went into the design of the overall framework. Now, the core area, I think, reflects both judgments about my judgment and then ultimately your judgment. My judgment about what are the reasons of intrinsic value and the reason of instrumental value that would support a core program. Now, one of the instrumental reasons is that we know from the work that's been done on knowledge economies, on the way institutions function in the 21st century, the work that's been done by PISA. PISA has a project called the DeSoco Project, which just published a report in May of this year, which is trying to map out what are the range of kinds of choice of skills and capacities that young people need in order to successfully negotiate the 21st century. And they're complex and they're difficult and they're demanding and they're different from the kinds of skills and capacities that we used to have or were required to have expected to have 15 or 20 years, 30 years ago. So the kinds of tasks, the kinds of skills that young people need are complex, they are difficult, they are different from the kinds of skills and capacities that young people were required to have 30 years ago. In the work that I've seen, and again, I'm able to read a slice of the research that's done, but of the research that I've done, of the reading that I've done and the research that I've done, it's fairly clear that there's a consensus developing internationally that everyone needs to know something about mathematics. Not canonical mathematics, not arcane mathematics, not academic mathematics necessarily, but an understanding of the way the world works and be able to think about their everyday lives in mathematical ways. And so those kind of mathematical understandings are a core part of a field, I mean, one of the fields that we identified. And the same is true of science and the humanities. Now, in the case of the humanities, but I also think in the case of science and mathematics and the arts and the social sciences, these are ways of, as I used the metaphor this morning from Michael Oakeshott about disciplines as conversations. Disciplines as conversations is a way of joining a long historical public conversation about the meaning of our experience of nature, of ourselves, and of others. And it seems to me that one of the educational decisions we need to make is to make a judgment that is important for young people in this culture, and I would have thought lots of cultures, to join that conversation in a meaningful and competent way. So that's a judgment that I made. It's a normative judgment, a moral judgment. And I think it's a judgment that, I'm quite happy to stand by it. I think it's something that a system that aspires to be a liberal democracy is going to commit itself to those kinds of principles. So there are key kinds of understandings about self and others and nature that we want all young people to have, both because we want them to be good citizens and good workers, but also because we want them to have the best kind of life that they are capable of imagining and pursuing themselves. So it seems to me that those normative issues are central to what it is that defines a good education and the kind of the responsibilities that we need to exercise here. In terms of, let me say two other things. One is about disciplinarity and about curriculum design. In a way, I think the curriculum design issue at the macro level is the easy part. The real hard part of curriculum design is working at the unit level, at the lesson level, of designing units and lessons that have genuine depth, genuine meat, good stuff, engaging stuff. And that's the hard work that has yet to be done in schools more broadly. It's the tougher part of what this task is about. This is the easy part. The hard part is to design curricula that have genuine intellectual depth, genuine existential or capacity to engage kids in the work of the schools. Now, that's going to be a lot tougher than sitting around now designing a curriculum, a framework that we think is going to work. The hard work is going to be done in the years in designing units that have genuine intellectual depth and engagement. So I don't see this as actually the most important task that this task force, this committee, has to deal with. The really hard task work is going to lie in the future, in schools, as teachers work through professional development and work with each other in the schools in designing units that have genuine intellectual depth and the capacity to engage kids in learning. So I think that's a big issue. I want to emphasise again that I saw disciplinarity not as a means for splitting the vocational and the academic, but as a means of reconciling the two, of reconciling school life and real world, of the academic knowledge and vocational knowledge. Peter, in his paper that he gave in September, quoted Turner, in which it goes something like, the task is to how do we intellectualise vocational education and vocationalise intellectual education or academic education. I think that's right on the money. And I think a part of the core challenge of curriculum work is how do we make academic education more disciplinary and how do we make vocational education more disciplinary? Because if we are able to succeed in doing that, we can both make the education more valuable, richer, and more useful in an institutional context. In the paper that Rob Gilbert and McLeod did, they actually talk about and reviewed the research on the kinds of understandings that are appropriate through the different pathways, through the tertiary pathway, through the vet pathway, and through the work pathway. And what they found in each of those instances, that where students have a deep understanding of the knowledge of the disciplines, their capacity to perform well, whatever institutional setting that they ended up in, was enhanced or improved. And I don't know of any research that would contradict that. Let me say a couple of other things. One is about assessment. How well this will work, how well any kind of a curriculum framework is going to work, will depend upon the kind of assessment system that is put up. I think Queensland has an assessment system that is able to generate the kind of learning outcomes, or at least support the learning outcomes that you want. Alan was talking about assessment in his paper. Let me just give you an instance from some work that we've done in Singapore that I think might underscore the relationship between equity and assessment. In Singapore, the relationship between high-stakes assessment and social class background is extremely strong. What families you come from matters enormously in how well you do in school. What we found when we looked at the relationship between social background and authentic assessments, and these are self-reports on what students, the behaviours that they can engage in a real-world context. We found that the relationship between the authentic assessment or the authentic tasks and social class background or race and gender, the betas for social class or gender went right down. So you can lower the impact of social background on student outcomes by having a multidimensional a system of assessment that doesn't simply rely on conventional high-stakes assessment. Now, I think in Queensland, you already have an assessment system that allows a kind of broad, multidimensional evaluation of student work. And I think that's something that's worth sticking with and building on. And I'll call a halt to it at that. Thanks.
Thanks very much, David.